Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo won't say why he asked President Trump to fire State Department Inspector General Steve Linnick, but Pompeo said the request was not about investigations into Pompeo's use of State Department power. The Linnick firing was the latest in a string of presidential firings of officials in watchdog roles in recent months, a trend that is raising eyebrows even among some Republicans. Ken Rudin is host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll post a link to the podcast at WOSU.org/allsides. He joins us now. Welcome back, Ken.
Thank you, Ann. Good morning.
So the president says he never heard of Steve Linnick, but insisted he has every right to fire whomever he wants. There's been questions about that, about the extent of his powers in the past that he said, you know, that he can do pretty much anything he wants. Has this ever been tested? Besides him,
has there ever been a Donald Trump before him? I mean, you know something. I was listening the way you were describing it, and this is vintage Donald Trump. I mean, yes, does he have the powers? Probably, and yeah. Even if he didn't have the powers, there is such a compliant Republican majority in the Senate that will let him do what he wants. But once upon a time, the Senate was the kind of body, both Republicans and Democrats, who would stand up and fight for these inspectors general who would be the watchdog of government. I mean, going back to George Washington, they talked about a runaway federal bureaucracy and a federal government. And it's just going on. It's just that any time there's any kind of pushback or any kind of investigation going on, the president fires him, and we don't know. I mean, they don't have to give a reason. Mike Pompeo, who apparently there's been an investigation on him with everything from government officials walking his dog and taking out his dry cleaning to for him to go around the country, perhaps pursuing a political future. There was talk for the longest time of him running for the Senate in Kansas. Right. The deadline there is to file is June 1st. So we don't know if that's happening. We probably think it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And they're even talking about a presidential bid down the line. So anyway, there's all these political things that Mike Pompeo was doing. There was official government investigations going on. And so they fired him. I mean, you know, in the past, I just remember when George W. Bush was president and Alberto Gonzalez, and they fired all these U.S. attorneys, mm-hmm. which, of course, any president has the right to do because a new administration can get rid of U.S. attorneys carried over from a previous administration. Mm-hmm. But all hell broke loose from Republicans and Democrats. Jimmy Carter did the same thing with U.S. attorneys, and he was criticized by both parties. Now the Republican Party is just saying, well, you know, that's just business as usual. And the Mitch McConnells of the world and everybody else in the Senate are going along with it.
Some Republicans, though, are starting to question this, aren't they?
Well, I mean, you know, something when Joe Biden did a tweet and criticized people, he said, well, like Chuck Grassley used to, you know, the former Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, who's still a member of the Senate from Iowa. He said Chuck Grassley was the kind of person who would stand up to this. And Grassley's press person sent out a very obnoxious tweet saying, well, maybe Joe Biden forgot or his memory failed him, which is one of the lines that the Trump people are sending out about Joe Biden, that his mental acuity is less than to be desired. But for the most part, the Republicans are not really standing up. There may be some private conversations. They said there may be some private notes sent to the president or conversations, but publicly, no. I mean, you think of even when Mitt Romney, who was the Democrats' favorite Republican because he was the guy who voted for impeachment on one of the two counts or voted to convict during the impeachment trial. Yesterday, he voted for a subpoena in that Hunter Biden investigation, mm-hmm. which everybody knows is just a blatant, clear effort to tarnish the likely Democratic nominee. So it just, if you could find me profiles and courage on the Republican side, I'd be very interested to hear it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and that is Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We're talking national politics today. And, you know, all politics is local, so if you have a question or comment,
loco.
Give us a
loco.
Call. Loco is right. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Ken, I mean, I know that isn't necessarily your beat to cover State Department IG stuff, but what happens when somebody's fired like that? Do the investigations go on? Do they just drop? I mean, do we know?
Well, I don't know, and that's a good question. But, I mean, what I do know is that when an IG is let go, he or she is apparently allowed to have 30 days before he or she has to clear out his desk. And this person was locked out of his office immediately. I mean, and Trump said, well, I don't know why I wasn't done sooner, although it just seems like that any kind of looking at the administration cross-eyed will lead to a firing or a reprimand or a banishment that Stalin-esque sounds like it jumps out at me, but I usually don't jump to those kind of comparisons.
No, you don't.
Because everybody is their own, you know, everybody's their own worst comparison. But this is just not something I've ever seen. You talk about abuses or overreaches of Nixon or of Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton or anybody. I've never seen anything like this.
President Trump has been railing in recent days against former President Barack Obama, accusing him of perpetrating, quote, the greatest political scandal in the history of the United States. One journalist questioned, I think it was someone from the New York Times or the Washington Post, probably questioned him about what's the scandal. And he said, everybody knows about it. Everybody's writing about it, except, of course, your paper. And I think it was probably the New York Times as he was referring to. But I know it might have been the Washington Post. He hates them both. But do you know, have any inkling about what he's talking about?
I do. And this is not a scandal. And yet, you know, I was watching his interview with Maria Bartiromo, who, in memory, I think once upon a time she was a serious journalist. But now the kind of questions, I mean, when President Trump will say this is the worst political crime in history and they should go to prison for 50 years, and Bartiromo says, absolutely, absolutely, the worst ever. And I'm saying, what? This was about the so-called unmasking of Michael Flynn during the waning days of the Obama administration. They found that somebody was talking to Russians. They were just somebody in the government was talking to Russians, and they tried to find out. They investigated who it was. So this unmasking—that's the term used. Unmasking. They found out that it was Michael Flynn. They didn't make Michael Flynn's name public because his name was already public. But they found out that it was Michael Flynn talking to the Russians. Donald Trump reprimanded Flynn 2 years ago. Said he lied to the vice president about his contacts with the Russians and fired him. And he pled guilty.
Right.
Pleaded guilty.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
So now he's taking back the guilty plea. He's saying that nothing I did was wrong, that the FBI tried to entrap me. None of this is true. And now this unmasking, this great scandal, of course, involves Barack Obama. I haven't heard Hillary Clinton's name lately, but Joe Biden, James Comey, James Clapper, all these former Obama officials. And Trump says they need to be investigated. And within days, Lindsey Graham, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, says, "Okay, we're going to have an investigation. We're going to investigate into the FBI." Or yesterday, Ron Johnson of the Senate Homeland Security Committee said they're going to investigate the consulting firm that hired Hunter Biden. I mean, I think it's disgraceful what Hunter Biden did, said Jared Kushner. I mean, the obsession with Hunter Biden is so beyond the pale. But this is what they're doing. It's the paranoia, and the fact is that there's a presidential election just over 5 months away, And nobody seems to think it's weird or untoward that they're investigating Joe Biden. It's just it. Now I'm going to a comparison with the Somoza government in Nicaragua. I mean, it just everything seems to be happening that we've seen before, but never here, and yet it's here. I listen to my rants sometimes. I mean, nobody else does, but I listen to some of the rants I do, and I sound like I'm this ideologue from the Democrats or the left, and this is not it at all. It's just that somebody who cherishes democracy and the right to vote and the fact that you want to have more people voting, and this is an administration that has fought all these things every step in the way. It's just unprecedented, and I can't tell you how many times I've used the word unprecedented right. on your show.
I kind of summarized in my promos for the show, this just is an unprecedented year on so many levels. I feel the same way. I don't have quite your depth of history with politics, but it's been about 30 or so years for me. And
oh, I remember Teapot Dome.
Oh, I always have to be careful
Harding.
How I
oh my God. Harding was awful.
I'm trying to think about what would I normally be talking about at this stage of a presidential election cycle. We'd be talking about so many different things.
Well, there's still no shortage of things to talk about. Joe Biden's running mate.
Yes.
That is crucial, given the fact that he'll be 78 in November, there are a lot of people campaigning campaigning for the job. We'd be talking about that. We'd be talking about the primaries. We'd be talking about the upcoming conventions.
Right. We would have still been counting votes. Yeah.
What if this were Hillary Clinton? What if this were Hillary Clinton firing the IGs? Could you imagine what the Republicans would be doing, saying, well, you're firing everybody who's investigating you? I mean, it breaks my heart is what it really does.
Do you think, or what sense do you have about the enduring impact of this administration? I mean, if he wasn't reelected, if somebody else is elected next, is there, I'm just trying to figure out, do you undo things? Do you?
Well, you know something, I always think
it sounds
of
like
what
a dumb question. I'm not sure.
There are no dumb questions. And of course, with me, there were dumb answers. But I think go back to the waning days of the 2016 campaign. And they asked Donald Trump if he would accept the results no matter what happened. And he says, I don't know. I'll let you know.
Yeah.
Or it depends on who wins. And so even if he should lose, and I'm not predicting he's going to lose, I don't have any idea what's going to happen in November, let alone what's going to happen tomorrow. But the fact is that if he loses, what if they don't? What if they say it was fixed? It was a rigged election. He has said that so many times. Matter of fact, in the special election that the Republicans won in California last week for the seat that Katie Hill had given up, Mike Garcia, the Republican, won the seat. Before that, the Republicans were saying this is a rigged election. That, you know, they were already preparing for an excuse, and they won it. So that's what I
wonder about with him starting to criticize governors or whomever. I mean, there's the Secretary of State in Michigan who completely legally sent out applications for absentee ballots there to everybody in Michigan, and he threatened to withhold aid to the state of Michigan for that. And
Nevada, and which has this Republican Secretary of State. Now, initially, he said that they sent out ballots to everybody. That's what he tweeted.
Which was inaccurate.
Which was inaccurate. Of course, you know, he never makes mistakes. He just deleted the tweet and put up a new tweet.
Mm-hmm.
But he's so terrified of a big turnout. And so, you know, between the fear of the virus and, you know, God knows what the country is going to look like. I mean, let's hope that there's a vaccine because apparently that's getting sooner, it's coming sooner than later. And hopefully there won't be a relapse, although I fear that all the state, I mean, I look at some of the pictures of the beaches in Florida and people are not distancing from each other. They are not wearing masks. The crowds look like it's always been. I terribly fear a relapse of the virus, but people are afraid of these things. They're afraid and they're discouraged to vote. And if the president, you know, if they put people at the voting booths to scare people away, intimidate people from voting, these are some of the insidious things that people are not paying attention to because they're looking at the giant headlines or the silly stuff. You know, I'm gonna inject myself with bleach to fight the virus. And if people say, oh, that crazy Trump, I can't believe he said that. But there are other things, real serious risks to democracy that are going on behind the scenes that I worry about far more than the stupid stuff.
Listeners, if you have a question or comment for Ken Rudin, we welcome all points of view, of course. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, and we'll have a link to that podcast on our website at wosu.org. So we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Former President Barack Obama has pretty much avoided public criticism of his successor for more than 3 years. But in a pair of virtual commencement speeches on Saturday, Obama issued a not-so-subtle critique of how the current administration is handling the pandemic. We're talking about that and more politics today with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. You can check out the link to that on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Ken Rudin, what do you make of left-handed or sideways snarky remarks by former President Obama in the commencement address?
Well, I kind of think they've been understated. I wouldn't even call them snarky. I mean, it was clear who he's talking about, and that part is clear. But I thought what the most remarkable thing was, first of all, there is an unwritten rule in politics that you don't criticize your successor. And the Bushes have done it. Barack Obama has been quiet for most of the 3 years. I mean, both parties, presidents of both parties abide by that. Mm-hmm. But given the fact that, going even well before
likewise,
the birther
before,
issue.
I just wanted to say, but likewise, presidents typically don't criticize their predecessors either.
Well, that's the thing. You think of all the things that that Donald Trump has been saying even before he became president about the birther issue, about Obama did this, and I mean, in my on my podcast this week, I just do a little I put together a whole bunch of things that the president has been saying about Obama, you know, over and over again. So when Obama, first of all, there was a conversation, a private conversation that Obama had with some donors a week or two ago that was leaked. And it really wasn't incendiary or anything, mm-hmm. but it was clearly critical mm-hmm. of Donald Trump. Mitch McConnell had this interview with famed journalist Laura Trump on this podcast, and he said that what Obama did was classless, mm-hmm. and he violated the rule. And to think of all the things that Trump has been saying about Obama, that he should be in prison, and it's the worst political crime, and he wasn't born in this country, and he's not from Earth. I mean, all the things that Trump has been saying, and to have a slight criticism by Obama, you know, as muted as it was, and for everybody to go crazy, that was so classless of Obama. I mean, I suspect that Obama is going to, first of all, the president has never accepted the fact that whatever you think of Barack Obama, his numbers continue to be more positive than the current president. Now, I suspect that as we get closer and closer to November, his muted criticisms will not be so muted after all, because somebody's going to have to do something, and right now Joe Biden is not inspiring anybody. He's, you know, we always talked about that famous that basement somewhere, that secure location where Dick Cheney was for much of his vice presidency. We don't, you know, it's for Joe Biden to come out and say things, it's pretty rare. And again, look, you know, the country is slowly opening. Biden will have more opportunities to speak. But there are some Democrats who are really nervous that they need something to respond to the daily attacks, the hourly attacks they're getting from the White House.
I'm wondering to what extent Obama will be campaigning for Joe Biden.
I think it'll be all out. I really do. I mean, not because he was his running mate for 8 years, his vice president for 8 years, but because he just feels that he wants to change. But you know something? But presidents don't do that. I remember Ronald Reagan at the 1988 Republican convention urging supporting George Bush, of course, as vice president. But do I remember Reagan on the stump? Do I remember... Now, of course, with Bill Clinton and Al Gore, that was complicated to begin with, because Bill Clinton wanted to campaign for Al Gore, and Gore didn't know how to use Clinton, given all the scandals, personal scandals that Clinton was involved in. Al Gore didn't know how to deal with it. He didn't know, do I embrace him? Do I distance myself from him? So that was a complicated relationship, but I think that there's no complications between Obama and Biden, although you'll see Biden say things like, well, you know, I didn't always agree with all the deportations. I mean, people forget that when Obama was president, he was known as a deporter in chief. He deported more people here illegally than any president in history. But I think the two of them are still on the same page.
Let's see. Arlene and Lorraine, you're on the air. Hi, Arlene.
Hi. I was listening to Ken earlier and yourself about how President Trump is setting himself up to be able to say that the election is rigged. And my concern is what he's doing to the judicial system with all the judges and the firing of the watchdogs. It seems like if he doesn't claim that the election is set up, he's going to try and manipulate it legally through the judicial system.
Ken Rudin?
I had a campaign for Carter and Mondale, and I have watched for the last 55 plus years our political system, and it is scary. It is scary what his administration is allowing, and how they're quieting the reporters. I mean, when is somebody going to stand up and just tell the man, hey, you're a blatant liar?
Well,
with that, I have...
Okay, Arlene, thanks a lot. Ken Rudin?
Arlene makes so many good points. I mean, not only is the president allowing this to happen, he's encouraging this to happen. He's putting doubts in the sanctity of the election system. And that's part of the battles, the attacks on democracy that worry me the most. Because if he tells enough people that this is a rigged system, a rigged election, then one, it could certainly discourage turnout. And two, it could also... it lead to just complete uncertainty. Now, as far as his appointments of federal judges, that, of course, goes with the president. He has had more opportunity. Now that there's no filibuster anymore in the Senate, they could ram through all the judges they want. And so many judges, a good number of them, have been rated as not qualified or unqualified by the American Bar Association, but the Republican Senate has pushed them through. That is what President Trump promised he would do, and he's delivered on that promise. But as far as using the judicial system to to keep him in office or to deny a fair election. That, I mean, look, you know, I mean, we're only paranoid until we're proven wrong, or until we're proven right, I should say. I wouldn't get that worried, but I am worried about that if he does lose, and again, I don't know if that's going to happen, mm-hmm. there are people who won't accept it. They just won't accept it. And whether he's in office or not in office, I don't know if what changes, because I still think that the same forces of anger and I mean, why do you stand up in a state capitol with an assault weapon, protesting a governor's order to keep the American people safe, to keep the people of her state safe? I mean, why do you have to show up with an armed assault weapon? There is so much anger and division in this country that I fear. There's so many things I fear. I just don't know what's going to happen after the election. The only thing that people need to know is what is happening out there. And people just read the papers, and, well, there are fewer and fewer newspapers out there.
Yes, but they are out there, and you can get them online for a lot cheaper than having them delivered, so people ought to be doing it. So
there, they absolutely.
So there. I'm just going to say it. I want to turn to Charles now in London. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. It's such a pleasure to call in today. I wanted to talk about the fact that Walter Schaub, I can't remember what outlet, recently wrote an article employing journalists to cover and treat the United States like a crumbling republic, because that's what it is right now under this administration. And the fundamental aspect of any just and sustainable society is, of course, is who's going to watch the watchers. This accountability is required and necessary. And just this Monday, the press took Trump's bait and covered his claiming to be on hydroxychloroquine and zinc instead of focusing on the more salient issue of the many firings of the inspector general. Mm. And network TV does a horrible disservice to the nation with its lowbrow news content. The morning and evening news network shows contain so little substance and, more importantly, lack the type of context that they truly function as little more than news trailers. And predating Trump is the socially subversive and systemic kneecapping of civic competence on behalf of the oligarchy.
This call is originating from Ohio.
Charles, we just got cut off. So, but Charles, as usual, had a lot to say, Ken Rudin, and I'm wondering what you think of the news coverage. You agree, or what do you think?
I do. There's a lot he's saying that is absolutely true. We say this every 4 years, but we especially said this after 2016, that we, the media, the journalists, are not going to make the same mistake we made in 2016. I mean, you know, that famous tagline, but what about her emails? All the things that Donald Trump was saying and doing in 2015 and 2016, and there was the obligatory to show how fair we are, said, yeah, but Hillary Clinton and the emails, which, you know, putting them on the same page is just unbelievable. But Charles makes this point that there are these bright, shiny objects that TV news just can't help but go after. And the fact that the president said he's taking this drug that scientists warn against taking to wait off the virus, we focused on that for a long time. But what about, I mean, but everything else seems too difficult for much of the media to focus on. What does unmasking really mean? Mm-hmm. What does the IGs really do? How historically dangerous is this for democracy? And that just takes time, and we have short attention spans and all that stuff. So I agree with Charles that the job that we said we would do better than we did in 2016 is not coming to pass. Although, again, if you read the New York Times and if you read the Washington Post, and I know there are Trump supporters who really feel they are completely biased against Donald Trump, I just think they're writing, you know, what we need to know and what's out there. And I wish there were, you know, I mean, once upon a time, there were the Republicans who went to Richard Nixon and said the gig was up, you know, the Barry Goldwaters, mm-hmm. and, you know, people like that, and said that, you know, Watergate is just untenable. There are no Barry Goldwaters anymore. There's nobody with consciences. I mean, Mitt Romney every now and then, but there's never been a party so completely controlled And in the pocket of, as this president, it's to his political savvy and to his credit that he's able to do all these things. But there's no conscience anymore. And that's what just breaks my heart.
Robert in Fairfield County, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Robert.
Hey, I just had a quick question for Ken and maybe some clarification from him, because it seems to me that the system is more robust than just any one man, in this case, the president, and that I thought that the electors would submit their ballots or their votes to the House of Representatives, I believe, and then they ratify that, and then at that point, we have a new president, whoever it is. And maybe I'm mistaken about that, but it seems like once you have a new president, the power flows from the unitary executive at that point. And if, you know, when the new president's sworn in, Donald Trump can say anything he wants, and no one will listen to him, hopefully. And that's the second thing was the comment about paranoia. Sometimes paranoia is just clear thinking.
Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Well, you know something. I mean, first of all, as Mitch McConnell proved, you don't have to be president of the United States to block a Supreme Court. So even before Donald Trump was in office, Mitch McConnell refused to give Merrick Garland, President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court, didn't give him a hearing, let alone a vote. So you don't have to be president to run the things. And I'm hopeful that if there is a new president, but there's just so much. I mean, the internet, the conspiracy theories. I go on Twitter and I say to myself, why am I on this medium? It's just so disheartening. Mm-hmm. So maybe if there's a new president, things will be different. But there's those voices will still be out there. Social media will still be filled with conspiracy theories and rantings. And I'm just not as optimistic about the future as I wish I were. Ugh, I hate saying that because I've spent my whole career loving politics and being optimistic about, wow, I can't wait to see what's next. Now I dread to see what's next.
But to Robert's point about, you know, the Electoral College and that kind of a thing, I mean, it is what it is. We don't know. I mean, we've never had a president like this, but is there a way? Isn't the Constitution of the United States written in a way that would prevent somebody from taking over even if they don't win? Or retaining power even if they don't win? Yeah.
That is true. And actually, it's before the Supreme Court right now. I mean, the electors, the way we elect a president, I mean, everybody thinks we know it's not the case because
it's not the popular
Hillary
vote.
Clinton got 3 million more votes than Donald Trump. But ultimately, if, for example, if Ohio, I should know this, but let's say Ohio has 19 electoral votes, which means 17 congressmen and 2 senators. So you get 19 electoral votes. Those electors meet in their respective state capitals in December, and they vote for usually the winner of the state. They're not bound by it, although the Supreme Court is now hearing a case about the binding of electors. But electors, there's very rare when the electors say, wait a second, now we know better than the people of the state. So I think we're hoping too much, or we're relying too much on the conscience of electors, and not. I think the real thing is we have to focus on the people of the country and to make sure you think of all the people who sat home in 2016. My hope is whoever they vote for, Trump or Biden, they just come out and vote. I mean, the bigger the electorate, the more satisfying the result will be.
Right. And Ohio has 18 electoral votes.
Whoops, sorry.
From my quick check. But I checked and I just quickly checked. So I might, if I'm wrong, please do correct me, listeners out there. If you have a question or comment for Ken Rudin, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest is Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. And we're talking about politics today, sort of, in a way. It's different than it's ever been. I don't know how to describe it anymore.
Well, you know something? I mean, the fact is we're talking about the coronavirus and the response to it, and that has become political as well.
Yeah.
It just startles me that, look, I understand government intrusion and infringement on liberty and rights and things like that, but just like you have to wear a seatbelt when you're driving, why is it such an infringement on rights to wear a mask?
Well, how about no shirt, no shoes, no service? I mean,
exactly.
Is that an infringement? If somebody wants to walk into a restaurant with no shirt on, shouldn't they be able to? Well, no. There haven't been people with, long rifles hanging out at the State House complaining about that.
Why rifles? Why do you have to bring weapons?
I don't understand.
And why do you have children at these rallies with no masks? These poor children who are just pawns of why do this? And what scares me the most, and we've seen this happen, that beaches in California and Florida, which had been open, or like in Naples, Florida, it was closed because there's the outbreak, the crowded situations, and the fear of an outbreak. And just like with I was reading a lot about what happened in 1918 and 1919, mm-hmm. with the Spanish flu and the 675,000 Americans who died. And it seemed to be going away, but then it came back again with a vengeance. And
right.
Dr. Fauci's and others are saying that it's going to come back, and it could very well come back. And you can't start reopening the country until there's some kind of assurances that, that's what Sherrod Brown asked Treasury Secretary Mnuchin this week. He said, how many people have to die for the Dow, for the Dow Jones Industrials to go up, or for the stock market to improve? How many lives have to be taken? It was a bit, it may have been over the top, but I think the point he was saying is that you got to be careful. You got to be much more careful than we're becoming, and that's what frightens me. Okay. Enough.
Well, I mean, I do shows on the COVID-19, on the coronavirus, pretty much constantly. We're doing another show tomorrow with a medical, medical director for a big hospital system in Ohio, and people have a lot of questions about it, and they continue to ask them. And if there's one thing that's been continuously the case, is that we know very little about it. We just don't know a lot about it. They're learning and they're studying it, but we just don't know what the long-term effects. We just simply don't know. So,
I'm looking at the clock and I'm saying, my goodness, we didn't talk about vice. I mean, for all we know, I don't think Joe Biden is going to announce it much before the convention. But I'd love to chat about possible VPs. I'd love to hear callers who they think might be VP choices.
What do you think? I mean, people keep sending me, this and that, pathways for Elizabeth Warren. Then we see this. Is it the governor of New Mexico?
Yes.
Popping up, woman. It's going to be a woman, though, no matter what, right?
It's good. Well, he said it would be. And of course, I mean, that he made that promise in that last
debate.
With Bernie Sanders, a black woman on the Supreme Court and a woman as a running mate. And so for all the people who are excited about Andrew Cuomo, forget about it. It's not going to be Andrew Cuomo. It's going to be a woman. And so that's led to a lot of debates and fun conversations around the country.
Huh. Let's see. Brad in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Brad.
Oh, hello. Hi, Ken. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Brad.
With regard to Trump talking about election rigging and blaming the Democrats or warning that Democrats are going to cheat for the election, there is no greater example of election rigging and cheating than voter suppression. The Republicans are experts at voter suppression. I do believe that the Republicans are the only party in history to ever be convicted in a court of law of voter suppression. And it happened in 2018 in North Carolina in a congressional race. The Republicans tried to rig that election. So be careful what we hear in terms of when you hear that the election is going to be rigged, realize that they're the ones trying to rig it. As far as masks go, wearing masks, Democrats need to make sure that they get the best mask they can get to get ready to go out and vote, because mailing might be a problem because Trump is trying to interfere with mail voting also.
Ken?
And cutting money out of the U.S. Postal Service.
Right.
I mean, if
right.
you want to talk about conspiracy yeah. theories, you know something? It's two things about it. First of all, the issue in North Carolina that Brad mentioned mm-hmm. in 2018, there was a congressional race where some political operative working for the Republicans illegally gathered up unfilled out absentee ballots, filled them out themselves, and then submitted them. And so that election was thrown out. But there's much more insidious actions by voter ID, by closing polling places, by limiting by early voting. There are so many ways to discourage votes, and for President Trump and the legislatures to be voting against mail balloting, allowing a no excuse mail balloting, is just another way of suppressing the vote. It's just that thing. That's something that really crawls up my skin, because this is just, you know, subverting democracy, and it's just not a paranoia of fear. It is exactly what they're doing.
Chris in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I would just like to make a comment about the vice presidential stakes. I think it's wonderful that we have an absolute overwhelming number of qualified women to be vice president with Joe Biden. What a wonderful problem to have. And I think it would be great if he announced very soon who his vice presidential nominee would be. It would give such energy, and I realize it's not traditional to do it so early, but it would really put some energy into this race.
Huh. What do you
think? And that's really all I have.
Okay. Well, Chris, thank you. Appreciate it. What do you think, Ken?
Well, I agree that there's no shortage of women for vice president, just as there was no shortage of women who were running for president. I mean, mm-hmm. that was also a record-breaking number of women who ran this year for the nomination. But having said that, I think doing it too soon, and so therefore, if let's just say you do it next week, you do it June 1st, what are you going to say for the next 2 months before the convention? I think you got to... Obviously, the Biden campaign needs a little adrenaline somewhere, and a vice president thing will do it. But again, if you do that too early, then there's really not much to talk about for the next 2-3 months. So I kind of think this behind the scenes, and actually it's not even behind the scenes, because Stacey Abrams in Georgia is campaigning. I never saw anybody campaign for vice president as much as she is doing. But they're, you know, between Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren and Stacey Abrams and my personal pick, Gretchen Whitmer and Amy Klobuchar. I mean, there is no shortage of women. Val Demings, the African-American congresswoman from Florida. You mentioned the governor of New Mexico. You know, we always talk about how important or whether it's important or not. This time it is important, given the fact that Joe Biden will be 78 in November. Just actuarial tables alone suggest that his running mate, should they win, could either be president sooner than later, or at the minimum be the leader of the Democratic Party should Joe Biden lose or not run again in 2024. So this is a very consequential step, and he needs to be comfortable with his decision, comfortable with that person, just as Obama was comfortable with Biden. There are a lot of things to weigh. Do you want to get a state? Do you want to get demographic? Do you want to get ideology? A lot of things at stake here.
Oh, let's see. Eric in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Eric.
Hello. You know, I don't want to sound paranoid to the max, but won't Trump have a lot of authority as president between the time of an election and the swearing in of a new president? And we say, oh, wow, what can he do? But won't he have a lot of impact? I mean, the Senate will still have to swear in the new president, and verify the election. So I guess that's taking paranoia to another level.
Well,
but
no, let's see what Ken says, because we're running out of time. I don't want to cut you off, but I want to hear what Ken
says. Yeah, I mean, I don't think paranoia is the issue here. I mean, remember after Bill Clinton left office after 2000, he pardoned. I mean, there were the famous Mark Rich pardons. I mean, the president is in power until January 20th of 2021. So there's a lot that the president can do legally, completely legally, in between the election and the next swearing in of the next president.
All right, Eric, thanks for that. Mike in New Albany, you're on the air. Hi, Mike.
Hello, how are you today?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to make a comment about the perfect vice president for Joe, I think, would be Camilla. Was she a prosecutor?
Yes.
At one time?
Yes. She was state attorney general and a prosecutor and district attorney, yes.
Maybe she could be the one to keep me from smelling a little girl's hair.
Hmm.
Well, that's a thing that the Republicans do. I mean, Eric Trump Donald Trump Jr. called him a pedophile, called Joe Biden a pedophile in a humorous tweet the other day. Anyway,
he said
Kamala
he was
Harris interesting. Well, he said he was just joking. That's just, to me, calling somebody a pedophile is hysterically funny. Mm-hmm. But Kamala Harris, there are reports that Jill Biden is not a fan of Kamala Harris because of the way she took down Biden in those early debate about segregationists. You know, that girl was me. So I kind of think my prediction is Kamala Harris will be the remember, he promised a black woman on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kamala Harris is destined for the Supreme Court if Joe Biden wins, not running mate. I mean, not because of California, but I just don't know if Kamala Harris brings to what he needs the most. But who knows?
Thank you, Mike in New Albany, for that. So you're sticking with the Gretchen Whitmer.
Well, it's getting tougher and tougher given all the dams broke. Michigan is going through such heartache through the viruses, yeah, and the natural disasters, and the Republicans can't stand Whitmer. I mean, the Trump and the Republicans have put her on the enemies list. She may be too toxic. I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, how do you think any woman is going to fare at the hands of an opponent like Trump and Biden? I mean, Trump and Pence anyway.
Pence? Well, I don't know. I mean, look. Tim Kaine was Hillary Clinton's running mate in 2016. And I thought Mike Pence did better than Kaine in the debate. So obviously, ultimately, it rarely, except for Lyndon Johnson, it rarely matters who the running mate is. You're going to vote for Trump or you're going to vote for Biden. But I think, given the fact that not everybody is so enthused in the Democratic Party, so excited about Biden, he needs somebody who'll give him a spark. Geraldine Ferraro gave Walter Mondale a spark, clearly a spark, but they still lost 49 states that year. So there's just so much a running mate can do.
What about Elizabeth Warren?
Elizabeth Warren, well, you know, you say, well, she'll excite progressives, and mm-hmm. she might, even though Bernie Sanders people, I mean, the stuff about from Bernie Sanders supporters I've seen on social media, and I don't know how representative that is, was just ugly. They felt that she should have dropped out earlier. She should have backed Bernie Sanders. Donald Trump loves to spread the rumor that if had Elizabeth Warren dropped out earlier, Bernie Sanders would have been the nominee. It's very questionable. But the fact is that she would bring, she's 70 years old, which is not a spring chicken, but
I hope I look that good.
Huh?
Said, I hope I look that good when I'm 70.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know what is Delaware and Massachusetts the ticket? I don't know. There are a lot of people who would like her, and she's certainly been vetted enough in her bid for presidency.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You know, can I just say one quick thing?
Yep.
I regret that more Trump people haven't called into this show, because I would love to hear what they're thinking with all this going on.
They're listening, but I appreciate it when they do call. So thanks to everybody who did listen today. Thanks to Ken Rudin. Always appreciate your time, Ken.
Thank you, Ann. Stay safe.
You too. Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.